Desert Island Discs. Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway today needs only the briefest of introductions. It's our Gracie, Gracie Fields. Now, Gracie, we don't see nearly enough of you these days, and it seems a shame to send you off to a desert island when you do get here. How do you think you could face up to complete isolation? Have you the temperament that could stand it?
Well, I did have a few years ago, but now I don't think so. I think I like the security of streets.
Yes.
I like to be where the theatres are. In the past, I was in the theatre all the time and didn't get much peace. I was always working myself. Well, now I can go out, nobody notices me. I can slip in the theatre and really enjoy myself.
I find that hard to believe, that nobody notices you.
Oh, yes. Just an odd one now and again.
Do you play the gramophone very much?
Not as much as I would like to play it, because I get too many disturbances where I live.
In Capri?
In Capri, yes. But on the desert island, I'll have no disturbances, so I shall really enjoy playing the records.
How did you set about choosing the 8 to take with you? Are you looking back? Are they nostalgic?
Both. You're looking back, things that you remember, shows you've seen, that sort of thing. It's all mixed.
What's the first one you've chosen?
Well, the first one is a little song that I heard being played continuously in New York last year, and it kept following me around. Actually, this is the most fascinating thing. And it's called The Little Drummer Boy, done by the Harry Simeone Chorale.
Little Drummer Boy, sung by the Harry Simeone Chorale. What's your second choice, Gracie?
Well, my second choice is a song from Gigi, and it's sung by Maurice Chevalier and Hermione Gingold. I think it's one of the loveliest duets I've ever heard. I think everybody loves this, as I remember it well.
We met at 9.
We met at 8.
I was on time.
No, you were late.
Yes? I remember it well. We dined with friends.
We dined alone.
A tenor sang.
A baritone.
Ah, yes. I remember it well. That dazzling April moon.
There was none that night.
Maurice Chevalier and Hermione Gingold from the soundtrack of Gigi. Gracie, what brought you into the theatre? Was there any precedent in the family?
I was the first one to go into the theatre because I had an exceptional voice. And my mother knew I had an exceptional voice. She had too, but she was never allowed to go in the theatre. But she would get as near theatre as she could by moving continuously opposite theatrical boarding houses. And I was living opposite one of these theatrical boarding houses, and I used to sit on the step and sing like the dickens, knowing that someone's going to come out, give me a penny or an halfpenny. Anyway, a lady came out one day called Lily Turner, and she said, I want to see your mother. And I went to see mother. She said, I think you should go in the singing competition at the old circus in Rochdale, where the Hippodrome is now. So she taught me a little song, which we had to sing, all of us, called What Makes Me Love You As I Do. But I exasperated poor Lily Turner because I couldn't sing What Makes Me Love You As I Do. I always sang What Makes Me Love You As I Do. So she went mad. She said, well, listen, can't you say what, what, what? I kept saying what, what, what. She says, sing quat. So I sing quat. And I won the competition with What Makes Me Love You As I Do.
How old were you then?
7.
And that was your first appearance?
That was my first appearance in the theatre.
And you were on tour with a juvenile troupe when you were
I was in several juvenile troupes. The Haley's Garden of Girls, Haley's Juvenile, Clara Coverdale's Nine Dainty Dots, and Charburn's Young Stars. Charburn's Young Stars, I was with them for about 2 years.
Yeah. And you also worked in the cotton mill as a part-timer.
That's right. I did 1 year because Mother said all the neighbours began to say, you must push her in the factory and tell him Father that he should push her in the factory and forget the theatre. And Mother said, well, you might lose your voice. You ought to be able to do something else, or you better go in. So I went in the factory. She said, but you're not going to stop. I'll see that you don't stop. Yes. And she did.
It's true that you never took a singing lesson.
No, I never took a singing lesson in my life.
And the small-town touring theatres in which you learned your job the hard way have almost completely disappeared now. Some of them were pretty rough, weren't they?
Oh, some of them were quite rough, but you didn't notice it when you're young, you know. Everything's a wonderful time.
Yes. Well, then, after years of slogging, there was one show that brought you into the West End.
That's right, Mr. Tower of London.
And it had several other members of the family in it,
That's
too.
Right, my sister, two sisters were in it, Betty and Edith, and my brother Tommy, and we were all married to somebody in the show. Tommy was married to a chorus girl, I was married to Archie Pitt, the owner of the show, and Betty was married to the scenic artist. Edith was about to be married, but she got out of the thing, went to America, and then came back again and married, so she was in the business. We're all in the factory.
Well, you came into the Alhambra in London. Is it true that you, the leading lady, had been up all night remaking most of the costumes before it
opened? I'd been up several nights before, and I'd had the girls sitting up with me, too, who had decided that we had to be the best-dressed and the best-rehearsed dancers of all the London shows. And when the papers came out, I believe the next day, it said that they were beautifully drilled, like the Tiller's best troops.
Yeah.
And that was a big thrill for me. And the dresses were all remarked upon, too. And I thought, oh, really, really, I'm a blessed maker.
Well, at this point, your first West End success, let's break off for another record. What should we have next?
Well, I'm very, very fond of this special record. It's Rachmaninoff playing his second piano concerto, a bit of the last movement.
Rachmaninoff, in part of the third movement of his second piano concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by Leopold Stokowski. Well, now, what happened after Mr. Tower of London, Gracie?
Well, then I did a vaudeville act for quite a while and then went into a play with Sir Gerald Murray.
Yes.
And my family and everybody were shocked that I should go into a play, and they said, well, we think you should continue with your vaudeville work. You're killed off in the first part of the show, and you've got the time, then you can slip over to the Alhambra, London, and do your own vaudeville act. You must not forget your own art, your own work. And that I did. And then on top of that, I did my first cabaret. That was at the Café Royal. It was my first and last in England.
Yeah.
But in America, I've done a lot of cabaret since, and I quite enjoyed it. But I prefer the theatre always because I like that row of footlights.
Well, they were certainly working hard, weren't you?
I was doing 6 shows a day, and then recording and doing something. I was just a young horse, I ought to say. I must have been.
There was an occasion shortly after this when you took over a part from one of the Duncan sisters at the Gaiety Theatre at tremendously short notice.
Yes, it was very funny, going from Lady Boire in Gerald de Maurier's play, and where I had to be fretfully like that, you know, I was supposed to be head of that heart. It was very funny.
And the part at the Gaiety Theatre?
The part at the Gaiety Theatre was really my cup of tea. I'd seen the Duncan sisters, who I adored, in Topsy and Eva.
Yes.
I saw their first night. And when I met Rosetta Duncan in the Savoy one day, having lunch. She was in a terrible state. So her sister's sick, can't do the show, and this, that, and the other. I says, oh, I'll do it. Oh, she says, oh, no, nobody can play my sister's part. Nobody can play Topsy. I says, oh, I can play it. I saw the first night. Well, she didn't believe me, and the different people around didn't. I said, well, I feel sure I can do it because I just felt it. And I did it, and it was very, very wonderful that evening.
Yes, and on your opening night, you were carried shoulder-high down the Strand by your admirers.
Yes, it was a terrific evening, but I enjoyed doing that show. Little Topsy. That entrance laugh.
Oh, then came films both here in Hollywood and the international success that's been yours ever since. Now, Gracie, have you any one outstanding ambition, any one thing in the profession that you'd like to achieve but haven't done yet?
Well, I would like to do an outstanding play, something that you can really get your teeth into. It hasn't turned up. I've played in a play which is Buried Alive, Arnold Bennett's Buried Alive, which they called Holy Matrimony. That was in a film without singing, and it came out one of the 10 best the year that I did it. And then I did The Old Lady Shows Her Medals in 1956 on the television, my first straight play on television.
Yes, you received an award for that.
And I received the award for that, for the Best Actress of the Year. And that was the first two plays that I've done without any singing in it.
Well, there may be even one in the post.
Well, there
moment.
Must be a third, mustn't there? Well, I hope it brings me to London if someone finds it.
So do we. Well, let's have your fourth record now. What will that be?
Well, the fourth one is that delightful song, The Twin Soliloquist from South Pacific, sung by Mary Martin and Pinza. I shall never forget the first night I saw them in South Pacific. It was really such a thrill.
Younger men than I, officers and doctors, probably pursue her, she could ever take.
Wonder why I feel cheery and jumpy. I am like a schoolgirl waiting for a dance.
Can I ask her now? I am like a schoolboy. What will be her answer?
Mary Martin and Ezio Pinza from South Pacific. Your home now is in Capri. That's where you spend most of the year.
Yes, about 8 months of the year. And then the other 4 months I like to be between England and America. Mm. I like to go in the winter time to watch people work, do the things that I like doing.
Your enthusiasm for Capri began quite early in life, didn't it?
Yes, very early. When I was being made such a fuss of, I never got the chance to even learn a new song. I was always opening a bazaar or doing something, and usually from 11 o'clock in the morning they used to pick me up in any town I went to, and I never had any day to myself, so I couldn't learn new programs, and I used to go to Capri if it was only just for 1 week.
As well as your villa there, you also have a restaurant and a swimming pool.
Well, now we have, yes. This was built a few years back, thinking that we'd settle down. My late husband, Monty Banks, I thought, well, it'll keep him quiet, because he was always in one country and I'm in another. And I thought, well, I always talked about retiring, actually, ever since I've been in the theatre, although I love the theatre, but when I get to a bad town, I always retire. And they always used to laugh at me. But anyway, I was always planning then we'd retire and I should keep house and he would run the restaurant. Mm. Anyway, he died before it was completed, and then I was left with it. People thought I would throw it in the ash can and sell it for nothing. I said, no, we haven't finished building it yet, but I hate to see anything half done. So I shall finish it and just hope for the best and see what happens. Well, I finished building it, then I met Boris, and then it ran for 2 years, and I was doing one-night stands, paying for it, it seemed like, and I met Boris, I'll give anybody half a crown to take it away from me. So he said, well, I do not know anything about this business, but I will do my best. But he knew more about things than I did, and he put it right on the proper business-like scale and rented the restaurant, and since then, it's been rented. But that you have to be brought up to.
Yes, indeed. Do you still run your orphanage near Brighton?
Oh, yes, we still have the little orphanage still going. Yes.
You've been running that for
There's
a good many years.
There's 18 children there, yes.
It's for the orphan children of actors?
For the, yes, of theatre people, yes.
Well, you must have a good many nephews and nieces in different parts of the world from that orphanage.
Yes, I certainly do, and I'm awfully thrilled to meet them. They come round and see me when I'm in America, when I've been doing tours across Canada, and those kids come up to me and they say, that was the best time of our lives. Really, it was. So it's nice to hear these
yes,
things.
Yes, you have a very big family scattered around
very
the
big
world.
Family, yes.
Well, let's have record number five now, Gracie.
Now, number five, well, this is a favourite, I think, of all English people, although they play it in Italy on our television. We get it a lot. And a lot of people in there, we were arguing about it. They said it was an Italian melody.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, no, it's English. Now we better start something because the melody is Greensleeves.
Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on that fine old English tune, Greensleeves.
That's right.
And what's number six going to be?
Well, number six, I saw the film recently, and I was very impressed by the music, and it's the main theme from the soundtrack of Exodus.
The main theme from Exodus, Ernest Gold conducting the Sinfonia of London. Gracie, how efficient a castaway would you be on this island? Could you look after yourself all right?
Oh, I think I should manage. You know, you put me anywhere. I'm not fussy, so I can always manage something.
You could build a shelter.
Oh, yes.
Ever done any fishing?
Yes, many times, yes.
Good. Are you good?
Catching crabs, lobsters and things like that, and carrying them home and that sort of thing. Oh, yes.
Are you a good cook?
I can manage. My husband says I'm not bad at all, but I'd like to be much better.
Yes. I've no doubt the rescue ship will find a restaurant, a swimming pool already on this island. Let's have record number seven.
Well, number seven, I've chosen one of my own. Do you know why? It's one I did many, many years ago, and it rather fascinates me in the way that my voice has gone down lower. But as it's gone down lower from the top register, it's gone lower in the lower register. So I'm very lucky it's in the same range.
Mm.
But this one was when I was in my very, very top register, and very clear, which I enjoy, and many people have enjoyed it too, and that is the Holy City.
City. Have you ever counted up how many records you've made during your career so far?
I think it's over 200.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a complete collection of them?
No, not a complete one, but I think I'm getting one. One of my fans has written to me and he's told me he's got lots of records of mine. He's got 60 over, and there's 60 that I haven't got. that it was very funny. I remember we had a big luncheon they gave me, HMV, many years ago, and it said that it was for the pressing of my 4 millionth record. And a woman was in a hairdresser's, and I heard her, she was sitting next to me, so she said, "Well, I know you've done a lot of records, I've only got 3, but 4 million, you must have never stopped singing."
Well, what's the last one going to be for the island?
Well, the last one is Charmaine. It's a song I've enjoyed singing in the past many times, and I shall go off singing it now when he's finished.
Mantovani and his orchestra, Charmaine. If you could only take one of these 8 records, Gracie, which would it be?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it would be Rachmaninoff playing his 2nd piano concerto.
And you're allowed to take one luxury to this island, something that's of no practical help in living, but something you'd like to have.
Well, I would love to own the real Renoir picture. I think it's called The Picnic. I'm not positively sure, but there are many characters, people on this picture, and I had a reproduction, and I never get tired of it. It just fascinates me. I can imagine what they're all saying to each other.
And one book apart from the Bible and Shakespeare?
Well, one book I read many years ago was Galsworthy's Forsyte Saga, and I would really like to read that again, nice and slowly, with no interruptions. Just dream on the island.
All right. And thank you, Gracie Fields, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Disc.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.